to Redefined by Love. My name is Jennifer, and of course, I'm the host of Redefined by Love. And if you're new here, I want to be the first to thank you for coming to spend some time with us. We hope you stay a while, follow or subscribe to this podcast, depending on where you found it. But most of all, we want to let you know what we do here. So this is a podcast that was started with the intention of doing just what the name says, literally redefining years of trauma, programming, and the like to give us a clear perspective of who we are and who others are based upon the love of God. So if you found your way here, I'm so happy that you're here, and I hope you stay a while. Now, today's episode is going to be called Heightened Expectations. And it's going to be an interesting discussion, so I hope that you get something out of it. So, we have all heard the phrase expectation. Furthermore, I'm pretty sure anyone that's coming across this podcast has experienced either disappointment of expectations not met or amazement at someone or even God exceeding our expectations, right? And as a result of some of these experiences, it is natural that we begin to either change our expectations. So we sometimes notice that we've set expectations too high, and sometimes we notice that we've set expectations far too low. And that's what we are going to talk about today. So to start this discussion, the first question is, what are expectations? What does it mean to have expectations? And I pulled this definition straight out of good old-fashioned Webster's Dictionary, and it has a twofold definition that I'm going to share. So it says it's defined as the act or state of expecting or anticipation, right? And the second definition is the basis for expecting or assurance. Now, the reason that these two definitions are so important is because they speak of the two types of expectations that we most often find ourselves involved in. So the first set of expectations is going to be our expectations for ourselves and our expectations for others, right? And then the second set of expectations, the assurance, right, is going to be our expectations of the Lord. And I first want to say that they are different. Like, there's a different thing that we can expect from people than what we can expect from God. And if you're expecting the same thing from people that you can expect from God, you are going to be met with disappointment or unmet expectations pretty much every time. And what I have found in my life is a lot of my disappointments, a lot of my frustration in relationships, a lot of the things that I have felt let down by were the result of unrealistic expectations. And unrealistic expectations happen when we want people to do for us what only God can do for us. And so I first want to start by talking about that type of expectation, and then we'll move into more of what our expectations should be of God. So the first thing that we have to understand when we talk about expectations is that our source is Christ. Our source is not the people in our lives. Our source is not our marriage. It's not our children. It's not even our jobs. It's no man walking on the face of the earth is capable of being your source, because eventually they're not going to be able to hold up the weight of being your source and sustaining their own needs as well. So that's the first thing. So what I often find is that when we experience trauma, we begin to try and find other things or other people to be our source. So we find relationships, be them friendships, family relationships, romantic relationships, pastoral relationships, business relationships, whatever the case may be. We begin to create these relationships with the purpose of meeting the needs that the trauma has stopped us from understanding how to meet ourselves. But furthermore, the trauma has blocked our ability to understand that we can actually go to God to get these needs met. So we often spend years and years in these cycles that cause so much frustration and pain because we're looking externally at other people or things to be the source that meets our needs. So this often goes into things like drugs, alcohol, using sex in an inappropriate way, attention seeking, any other number of habits that we begin to put on as our way of getting our needs met. Although temporary, you know, they may provide a temporary boost or a temporary feeling that our needs have been met. And the result is calamity every time, because the things, no matter what they are, even if they're good things, so food, for instance, right? Food is not a bad thing inherently. We actually need food in order to survive and live and thrive. Our body, the cells in our bodies need food to regenerate. We need food for our brain. We need food for the blood to flow, right? So we need food. It's not a bad thing. But placed in the position of meeting our needs and expecting food to deal with our emotional instability, or expecting food to regulate our emotions for us, food then becomes a tool in the hands of the enemy that becomes a calamity step. It becomes the thing that trips us up and makes it impossible for us to walk upright with the Lord. So same thing with anything else you look at. Some things we know are just inherently not good things, right? Drugs are not usually good things. Alcohol in excess is not a good thing, right? But to speak about even relationships, you know, I am one who I experienced a lot of trauma very, very early in my life. And because I experienced a lot of trauma early in my life, I began to try to use many different things as my source of healing. Food, sex, relationships, attention, status, education, titles, positions, money, you know, like pretty much anything that became available to me, I started to try to put these things in the place of being my source. Well, then once I started realizing how bad it was with the things and they weren't working, I started to use people for this purpose, which is also unfair to the people, and it's also only going to cause frustration in you because they cannot do it. It's not possible, right? So what would happen is I would have these relationships and somebody would become the person I leaned on when I felt bad. So every time I had a bad day, or every time I felt upset or frustrated or things weren't going my way, I would call this person or these people, and I would expect them to be the thing that got gave me my validation and lifted me back up. And that was an expectation I had. So I literally anticipated that people would meet my needs emotionally. And what would happen is when they didn't, I got very disappointed and felt wounded and felt offended by them. And I want to just go out on a limb and say something. A lot of the offenses that happen in the body of Christ and otherwise, they happen because we have set unrealistic expectations for others. For instance, you left your church because you felt like the pastor didn't give you enough time. Well, if you have a church that's got hundreds of members, you know, the reality is that the pastor can't be your personal 24/7 person that you call on to get your needs met. There are going to be times when you reach out to the pastor and they're not available in that moment. And this is when we have to go to the Lord and allow him to be able to teach us, right, how to find in us where he resides in our spirit, right? In us, find the needs that we have to be met, right? And so kind of moving on from that, you know, because there's a whole toxic conversation that we can have about that, where, you know, we discuss how easy it is for us to begin to lean on people in this way, right? And I want to talk about some of the results of relationships that we do this in. And the only outcome of these relationships is toxic dynamics, usually some form of trauma bonding. Toxic relationships where one person is being used up, so to speak. One person is pouring out constantly and the other person is just constantly receiving. Well, no matter who that person is, because again, they are not your source. So no matter who that person is, eventually there's going to be a moment when they can't pour out because they may be going through something in life. They may be experiencing a rough season where they need God to pour into them for a moment, right? So they can't be there for you. So let's shift for a minute, right? And let's talk about who is our source, right? So our source is God. His love in us is the very source that we live from. And he is in us, Christ in us, is the expectation of glory, right? So if we begin to shift, and that's Colossians 1:27 says, living within you is the Christ who floods you with the expectation of glory. This mystery of Christ embedded within us becomes a heavenly treasure chest of hope, filled with the riches of glory for his people. And God wants everyone to know it. That's the Passion Translation. So we have this beautiful treasure chest, Paul describes it as, this treasure chest within us that is meant, right, that is meant to be the place where God releases all of his treasures to sustain us. So if we shift our expectations from man providing, man being our source, man helping us regulate our emotions, man helping us, you know, cope with the difficult seasons of life, right? Which will come. Like, we all have difficult seasons of life. But if we are looking for other people to sustain us and meet our needs and help us navigate those seasons, we are going to be disappointed every time. I don't care how good your support system is. Doesn't matter how awesome your family is. Doesn't matter how much your husband or wife loves you. Doesn't matter how great your kids are. Whatever the relationship is, there is no person that, number one, is designed to meet your needs as your source, and number two, that can meet your needs as your source. It has to come from Christ in you, the expectation of glory. So once we begin to see it this way, right? And I'll tell you, earlier this year, my entire relationships my friendships, my social life totally shifted because of this very revelation that I'm talking about. The revelation that my expectations were set on man to meet my needs. They were set on man to heal me. They were set on man to give me validation. Once I realized this and I realized the negative effects of it, and then I began to shift and look to God to meet those needs, look to God to be my source, it was like it released so much strain and pressure that was in my relationships. Next thing I knew, people were lighter in their conversations with me. People didn't feel like I was constantly pulling everything they had out of them. They actually began to feel like I was pouring into them, because what started to happen was I was getting my needs met from the Lord. So when I came to conversations with other people, I could actually serve them. Whereas before, when I was looking for them to meet my needs, there was no time for me to serve them because I was too busy looking to them to meet my needs. And so that's why we talk about expectations, because inaccurate or unrealistic expectations cause disappointment. They cause emotional instability. They cause all types of issues in our lives. And if we want to move to a place of wholeness and healing and completeness and being able to stand as who we are, right? We're going to have to learn to set our expectations in the proper place. So this is what I wanted to talk about. Let's first start with the expectations of God. I really don't think we can ever set our expectations high enough in God, because he said no matter what we can think, hope, or imagine, his plans for us are greater. So I think that when we think about my expectation for healing, my expectation for life flowing through me, right? That river of living water. When I think about my expectation of peace, my expectation of joy, my expectation of being able to remain kind, right? And have the fruit of the Spirit flow through my life. I don't think I can set that expectation too high as long as I set it with God. So there's nothing I can expect of him that he can't deliver. He wants to give me everything. He wants to give you everything. He wants to sustain you fully. He wants you to live from your union with him, so that there is nothing that you think he can't do. And you understand that everything you are and everything you have and everything you need all flow from that beautiful union life that we have with him. Right? So once we shift and begin to look at that, we cannot possibly have inaccurate expectations in God. Like, we often have expectations set too low in God because we view God as a reflection of man instead of viewing man as a reflection of God. But that's a whole other conversation for another day. So if we're looking at God, for instance, something that happened with me, I don't know, last year, God literally spoke to me and said, "You don't know how to be a daughter because you've never been one." And honestly, I think I spent 3 days on the floor weeping over that, because it was 100% true. I didn't know how to come to him as a daughter and look to him as a father, because I didn't have a father. I didn't have a mother, you know. So I had relatives, a grandmother and aunts that kind of raised me, but I never really was mothered from the space of like, "You're my daughter. I adore you. Like, I'm happy you're here. I'm excited to be your mom," right? And so I didn't understand that as as being a father. To me, being a father meant he tolerated me. He kind of dealt with me, but it wasn't he adored me. And he had to break that mindset off of me, because that mindset was actually stopping me from setting accurate expectations in him. Basically, I expected him to let me down. I expected him to not protect me. I expected him to not keep his word. I expected him to not be who he promised me that he was. And as a result of that, all I did was set low expectations in him and then high expectations in other people. So what I had done, right, was I had remade God in the image of man. So the men, the people, the humans that I had encountered in my life had set the expectation, and then I put that on God instead of having this amazing expectation in him to be who he says he is, and then understanding from there what a reasonable expectation was for men, right? And so then to shift it, right? So when it comes to people, what should our expectations look like for people? Here's the simplest way for me to put it. I think we all have the right to set our own expectations of how we expect to be treated in relationships, in business arrangements, in ministry relationships, marriages, families. We have the right to set those expectations, right? But with two specific important caveats that I want to mention. The first one is we have to be able to embody what we expect. In other words, I don't think that I can expect somebody to be a good friend if I'm not one. I don't think that I should expect my friends to lay down their lives and put everything aside to be there for me every time I call, especially when I'm not there every time they call. You know, not that anyone is there every time, but the expectations of relationships are, I think, from my perspective, the fruit of the Spirit. You know, the fruit of the Spirit is what I expect out of my friendships. I don't expect anything more or less than the fruit of the Spirit. And in fact, I'm going to actually read that here. Okay. So I'm actually in Galatians, the epistle of Galatians, and I'm in chapter 5, starting with verse 22. So to me, this is my expectations of friendships. This is what I expect my friendships to look like. But this is also the expectation I set for myself. But that's a conversation for another day. But it's what I expect myself to show up as, right? So it says in verse 22, but the fruit produced by the Holy Spirit within you is divine love in all its varied expression. So essentially, this is perfect love, joy that overflows. I expect for there to be joy in my relationships with others. I expect for them to be joyful at our relationship, whatever that relationship is, whether it's friendship, whether it's family, whether it's marriage, whether it's business, ministry, whatever the relationship is, I expect that there is joy in that relationship, to be a part of it, to be in communion and in union and be able to experience each other. There should be joy that overflows, right? There should be peace that subdues. So what I mean by that is, yeah, we may disagree on some things. We may have some things where we have very strong disagreements. Listen, I have some friends that I've had for most of my life, who I literally have extremely strong disagreements with. And we may have slight discussions, I won't say arguments, because I really don't argue with my friends, but we may have these discussions, but someone in those relationship exhibits that peace that subdues. And that word subdues means somebody exhibits peace that disarms. And there is no battle for battle, axe for axe, fight for fight, going to war, one up hurting each other. It someone eventually is overcome and subdued by the peace. Therefore, the relationship remains in balance. And it's both sides, right? And then it says, patience that endures. You know, there are friends that I have that don't know the Lord. There are friends that I have that are involved in things that I don't agree with. They have behaviors that I don't think are healthy, and I don't like it. But I have to be able to exercise patience in those relationships. The same with my children, the same with my family, you know, who, and this one, the family one, used to be so difficult for me. My mother struggles with addiction, which the irony of that is mind-boggling because I am an addiction counselor. So sometimes I think about that and I'm like, wow, that is kind of ironic in such a painful way, right? But my mother suffers from addiction and I have to be patient as she walks that out. I have to be patient and trust that God is going to be who he says he is, and he's going to bring deliverance in her life and restoration, right? And but then there's kindness in action. And this is one that breaks my heart because kindness is so underrated in today's society and so rare in today's society. In fact, I think that we've just given ourselves a free pass to be unkind. Like, we just have told ourselves that we get to be unkind if we want and nobody can stop us and people just have to accept it. And the thing is, kindness is one of the simplest things that we can be. Kindness is something that can, again, bring life to someone else, right? And so I expect in my relationships that the people I'm in relationship with to be kind, but I'm also kind to them, right? And a life of virtue or goodness, you know, a life where they're looking, or a relationship where everywhere I look, I see goodness, I see beauty and love and the fruit of that, right? In the relationship, right? Then it says, faith that prevails. And see, this phrasing here that says faith that prevails, when in 2 Corinthians or 1 Corinthians, it talks about love. And the love that it refers to in 1 Corinthians 13, I think it is, talks about faith that prevails. So in other words, always seeing the best for people, always looking toward the redemption and restoration of God in people. That's what I expect from my friends. I don't expect my friends to look at me and see dry bones. I expect my friends to look at me and see a soldier in the army of the Lord. I expect them to look at me and see a minister of the gospel, even when I'm on a puddle on the floor, because that means that they know me by the Spirit. Scripture says, no man after the flesh any longer. So we shouldn't know each other by the flesh, which that word flesh translates into current carnal temporary experiences. So I shouldn't know you by what you currently look like, but I should know you by God's heart for you, God's plan for you, because God's plan will always come to fruition. And then it says, gentleness of heart. So that is meekness. That is gentleness. That is just taking the, where necessary, taking the position of grace. Taking the position of communicating and doing things in the most gentle way possible, where they're not going to aggressively pursue a goal, but instead they're going to ride the wave of love, you know, and strength of spirit. So this strength of spirit is talking about being able to be led by the things of the spirit. So they are pursuing the eternal truths. They are pursuing the eternal good for me, for them, for our relationship, for whatever we are doing together, right? But they're not pursuing just some temporary thing that is only meant to give a moment of gratification, right? Because what good does that do for us? And he goes on to say, never set the law above these qualities, for they are meant to be limitless. So I thought that that was really interesting, right? Because he's saying, basically, don't set these rules or laws or religious practices, if you will, above these things, because these things are actually what show what's inside of the person. And so these are my expectations of people. My expectations of a guy that I date isn't that he has all the money in the world and can buy me everything I can't buy myself. My expectations of my friends is not that they're going to always do everything for me that I need and be at my beck and call. These are unrealistic expectations, but it is realistic to expect my friends to be kind. It is realistic to expect my friends to have patience with me as I walk out the difficulties of life. That is expected. And also, it's something I should expect of myself, which is a whole other piece of it. If I'm not giving that, how can I expect it? So kind of the key point of today's conversation was, take some time, step back, look at your expectations that you have placed on others, on yourself, and on God, and identify if you have clear and accurate expectations or if you've set your expectations in error. I will talk to you guys next time. Thank you so much.